All right, 3, 2, 1, and we are live, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the T-Hatch Podcast, where we have open and in-depth conversations about the things that you and I care about. Today on the T-Hatch Podcast, I'm going to be talking to you about the NBA playoffs yet again. They have been so exciting up to this point. I think the NBA has done a phenomenal job, as have these teams, putting on some competitive basketball that is just fun to watch. So today on August 25th, I want to pretty much round up what has happened so far in the first round of the playoffs as some of these series start to come to a close and as some of the other series start to heat up and get very competitive. So it has been very exciting and I think will continue to be, and I'm very excited to talk about it. So I'm going to be going over every single series that we've got going on currently, all of the first round series, that is, as some of them have ended, and I'm going to start with the sweeps. I want to get those out of the way first, because obviously there's a bit less to comment on here, but still definitely some things to look at. So first one I want to look at here is the Boston Celtics and the Philadelphia 76ers. Boston ended up winning that series 4-0, swept the 76ers. Now, for the 76ers, they were missing Ben Simmons to injury, which is very unfortunate. However, when you watch that team play, they did not make the adjustments necessary to cope without having Ben Simmons on the floor and to fully take advantage of the skills that Joel Embiid has, because let's face it, Joel Embiid is a definite superstar level talent and a guy that, if fully utilized, could be an MVP candidate. So the fact that you were unable to even get one game on that Boston Celtics team is pretty tough pill to swallow for a 76ers fan. Now, I did a video recently on the 76ers, specifically focusing on their coach Brett Brown and how I thought he was not a good fit for that team, for that roster, or honestly for a coaching spot in the NBA in general if he wants to continue what he showed in Philly. They, after the series, have released Brett Brown. He is no longer the head coach of the Philadelphia 76ers. So moving forward, they will be looking for a new head coach. They will be looking to move in a new direction in Philadelphia, which, if you're a Philly fan, I would be happy about that, because I think that's going to get things moving in a positive direction as long as they can do things correctly. From the Celtics perspective here on this series, one thing I loved about watching this series and the Celtics offense in particular, as well as their defense, is really the difference that an excellent coach can have on a basketball team. So on one side with Philadelphia, we saw what can happen when a coach fails to adjust to the players that he has on his roster that are active and ready to play. And we saw the negative effects that that can have on a team when a coach is unable to adjust to the situation that they find themselves in. On the other hand, with Brad Stevens and the Boston Celtics, we saw what can happen when you have an absolutely excellent coach who is making not only the necessary adjustments, but all of the available adjustments on ways that you can fine-tune your game on the offensive and defensive end of the floor to absolutely demolish your opponent. And we actually saw that happen a couple times with the Celtics in this series. You could see things like Brad Stevens, you know, seeing plays ahead of time, seeing what the other offense is running, calling out pick and roll coverages to guys like Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, Kemba Walker as well. He's out there making adjustments to their offense. So I believe, I can't remember if it was game one or game two that they had won, but Brad Stevens saw that if they moved a lot of their offensive action above the free throw line as opposed to having it below the free throw line, it would actually open up tons of open shots for them simply because of the particular coverages that Philadelphia was playing against them. After making those adjustments, they came out, and I believe it was game three. Again, I'd have to double check, but they come out and blow out Philadelphia in that next game because they weren't just satisfied with a victory. They said, hey, we can get even better. We can get better shots, more efficient. Let's do it. Why wouldn't we? And that's what a great coach should do. A great coach should always be looking for every opportunity to leverage the strengths of his players, to leverage the strength advantages that you get in your matchups against a particular team, specifically in the playoffs. That makes a huge difference. So I think, you know, people are going to kind of see this series as a sweep, as Brett Brown getting fired, as Ben Simmons being injured, and just see it as that. But I think really people should look back on this series, watch some of these games, and see the real difference that a great coach can have on that product of basketball on the floor, and really how a great coach like Brad Stevens, like Nick Nurse, guys of that ilk, that they can have an impact on the game that is near the level of a superstar player. Now, obviously, guys have to be able to execute what the coach says. That's undeniable. You have to have great players on the court to follow through on great coaching. But when you have that combination, you get so much extra value out of a great coach. And the best part about it is they don't even count toward your salary cap. So you can go out and pay a premium coach. You can get the best coach that money can buy, and it's not going to hurt your chances to be able to build a championship roster. So that is definitely a point where teams need to extract the most value that they possibly can out of that head coaching spot, which of course is easier said than done. Nick Nurse's don't just grow on trees. Brad Stevens don't just grow on trees. That's why guys like Brett Brown stay in one job for 7 years. There's just not a lot of great coaches out there. So hopefully we can get some awesome young, don't have to be young, they can be any age, but some awesome coaching talent into the NBA and get an infusion of some other guys who really know how to bring the best out of these NBA players. So now I want to move on to another one of the sweeps. That would be the Indiana Pacers versus the Miami Heat. Miami took that series 4-0 in an upset, Miami being the 5 seed versus Indiana the 4 seed. And this was an interesting series for a couple of reasons. One, Miami has been missing Kendrick Nunn as he has really been unable to get himself into game shape after time that he missed being diagnosed with coronavirus and some time that he missed being outside the bubble as well. He needs to work himself into game shape before he can get playing. So they're missing one of the best rookies in the league this year, one of their best shooters, a guy who can handle the ball for them and create a little bit on their offense. So that's a little bit of a tough deficit to be missing. The plus side for that Miami team is they do have a diverse roster of guys who can handle the ball, who can play make for other players. So they were able to adjust and still have success. Now, the interesting thing for me in this series was how competitive a lot of these games were. They were tight, they were close, they were hard fought, but Indiana just was not able to pull any of these games into a victory. Now, with Indiana, obviously, Victor Oladipo was coming off of injury. Is he his full self? We're not 100% sure, but he didn't look like half of himself or anything crazy like that. He didn't look like an extremely lesser version of Victor Oladipo. Malcolm Brogdon looked like himself. Miles Turner and Sabonis were out there on the floor. So this was, for all ostensive purposes, a full-strength Pacers team, unless there's just something going on with Oladipo that we don't know about that's keeping him from being at his best. But from what I was able to watch, it did not look like that. So for me, that is a huge indicator for this Pacers team that they likely need to make some changes if they want to actually compete in the playoffs and actually start to head down a road where they can actually contend for championships, which with this roster, if this is what it's going to top out at, getting swept by the Heat in the first round, yeah, it's time to make some changes. So with all the rumors swirling about Victor Oladipo and him potentially wanting a trade anyway, I think this is an excellent opportunity for the Indiana Pacers to move in a bit of a new direction and potentially move on from Victor Oladipo and see what they can get in return. If they're going to do that, I would also like to see them try and move either one of Sabonis or Turner. I think both of those guys are best utilized at the center position, and I think you know, it's unquestionable that they're both good enough to start. So ending up in a position where you have to start both of those guys on the floor at the same time just does not let you fully utilize their talent, where they could be fully utilized somewhere else in exchange for a player that that other team is unable to fully utilize based on their roster. So I think that would be something that the Indiana Pacers should look to as well. Now, talking about this Miami Heat team, this is a really interesting team when you watch the way that they play basketball. One of the things that I love about Miami is that they are fearless to take advantage of the skills that their players have. And a lot of that goes to Eric Spoelstra, the head coach, who has been coaching since the LeBron days in Miami. And really... The best thing that I see them taking advantage of is the incredible level of skill from Bam Adebayo. Obviously, you know, as a first-time All-Star this year, he's been getting a lot of people talking about him, saying his name, saying good things. But when you watch him play, just the level of skill he has at his size, his strength, his athleticism, it's pretty dang scary. Really, the only thing that Bam is missing at this point is a consistent jump shot. But as we know, that is something that young guys have been able to develop historically in the NBA. So Bam Adebayo looks to continue to improve and become an amazing NBA center on both ends of the floor. So they're running tons of their offense through their center, getting him plenty of assists. And when you're able to do that, it takes so much pressure off of Jimmy Butler, who, you know, coming into the year, everybody kind of thought, oh, well, Jimmy Butler's really the only star on this team. Well, you get that second All-Star in Bam Adebayo, you get a great showing from guys like Tyler Hero and even Duncan Robinson, an undrafted guy just came out of nowhere, all of a sudden starts hitting threes like he's prime Kyle Korver. So this is an interesting team. It's an interesting roster. I love watching them play because it's just good team basketball the entire way. They have a huge focus on the defensive end of the floor and what that can do for them transitioning into those fast break opportunities, and really watching them leverage all those situations, those fast break opportunities into dribble handoffs, into pin downs to get shooters like Hero and Robinson open. I mean, goodness, when they get none back and they have another great three-point shooter out there on the court, good luck to some of these other teams. It's looking like they're going to go up against Milwaukee next, depending on how the rest of that series goes for Milwaukee. That would be an interesting matchup, seeing as Milwaukee has had at least some troubles with the Magic there in round one. So definitely a team to keep your eyes on are the Miami Heat there, led by Jimmy Butler. But enough about the Heat and the Pacers. I want to go on to the other sweep that we saw, which is the Toronto Raptors sweeping the Brooklyn Nets 4-0. The Raptors, man. Oh my goodness, the Raptors. The Raptors are one of my favorite teams because they just frankly don't care that Kawhi Leonard left. They don't care that they don't have a number one guy. They just don't care what anybody else thinks. They're going to go out and play great basketball. They're going to beat you with their team. And they're going to laugh the whole way because they've got just such a stacked roster that knows exactly what they're doing from 1 to 10. Everybody's locked in, knows exactly what Nick Nurse wants out of them on both ends of the floor. And when you end up in a situation like that where you've got at any time on the court, doesn't matter if it's your starters or your bench, you have five guys on a string thinking the same thing. Good luck to other teams. That is dangerous. That is scary. That is the kind of stuff that championship teams are made of. Now, of course, championship teams, as we know them historically, do have a great player, do have a bucket getter who can get one when you just got to give them the ball and get something. Who is that guy for this Toronto team? Can Pascal Siakam become that guy? That's a question that will have to be answered in some tougher playoff series. Obviously, we kind of expected to see a sweep here, just seeing as the Brooklyn Nets are missing Kevin Durant. They're missing Kyrie Irving. They were missing practically half their roster coming into the bubble. So no one really expected a ton out of the Nets this year. They didn't expect a ton out of themselves. They know, or knew rather, that coming into this year, next year was going to be the year for them when Kevin Durant is back. Now after the injuries with Kyrie Irving, when Kyrie Irving gets back, they'll be able to contend at full strength next year. So if you're a Nets fan, don't be discouraged by this sweep. You kind of should have expected this happening, but things are going to get better next year for Nets fans. But I'm very curious to see how far this Toronto team can go. This next playoff matchup between Toronto and Boston is going to be absolutely bonkers, because we're going to see an absolute chess match between two of the game's best coaches in Brad Stevens with the Celtics and Nick Nurse with the Raptors. I am so fascinated to see how this goes, who ends up winning that series, and almost maybe more importantly, who is the standout player that carries their team to those victories. I think that's going to be very telling moving forward for the power dynamics of the Eastern Conference for years to come. So that's all I've got on the three sweeps that we saw early. So now I'm going to move on to the series that look like they're headed to a close very soon, being the series sitting at 3-1. I'm going to talk about the one I have already mentioned briefly, which is the Milwaukee Bucks against the Orlando Magic. Obviously, game one against the Magic, Orlando stole that game from Milwaukee. Milwaukee being the one seed, most wins of any team in the league this year. They looked absolutely unstoppable. Then all of a sudden you get some schemes out there from the Magic on the defensive end of the floor, and Giannis is looking silly again. So this is the thing about Giannis and this Milwaukee Bucks team. I absolutely love them in the regular season. He looks unstoppable. He looks like the GOAT. He looks like nobody could ever compete with how good Giannis Antetokounmpo and this Milwaukee Bucks team is. And then you get into the playoffs, and all you have to do is bring two help defenders to wall up, and all of a sudden Giannis doesn't know what to do with the ball. All of a sudden, you just kind of leave Eric Bledsoe open for a shot, and oh, thanks, we'll take that rebound and get moving the other way. Like, if this is what your team gets down to when it comes to the playoffs, you got some serious moves to make, not just a few tweaks. You have some serious moves to make if your roster can collapse simply by one adjustment by the other team, by bringing two help defenders to wall off the paint and make Giannis throw that ball. Giannis has to add more wrinkles to his game. Giannis has to improve his shooting form, not just his consistency with what he's doing currently, because if you look at the guy's shoot, it does not look good. It's starting to look more Dwight Howard territory than it is, you know, someone like Kevin Durant, who is that size, who can shoot with the best of them. So we need to see some improvement from Giannis Antetokounmpo if he is going to be the guy that we have hyped him up to be. I think he has been that guy in the regular season, but unfortunately, when it comes down to the playoffs and teams make adjustments against him, he's had a really hard time coping with that. Now, all that said, they are up 3-1 against the Magic, but this, if I was to call any series in the first round that I would have thought would be a sweep, definitely would have been Bucks versus Orlando. Now, I don't think it's fair to necessarily criticize a team because they didn't sweep another team. This is the NBA. This is the playoffs. All of these teams earned their spot. They deserve to be here, and they are good teams. They can win any given game. So not necessarily to say that I'm, you know, criticizing the Bucks for not getting a sweep. But just, I think they could have played this entire series in a much more dominant fashion, in a way that really showed who they are and set the stage, not only for Giannis, but for the rest of that team. I think it's on him to set the tone, really set that for them moving forward, that they are going to be a formidable foe in the playoffs. If you are going up against the Bucks, you should be scared. That's not what they've been. They haven't played like that. They haven't made teams scared. Miami is going to be going into this next series against the Bucks with some confidence, believing that they have a chance to get an upset here. And that's not the mindset you want to leave for a team like that Miami Heat team, which they put the work in. They're grit and grind type of guys. They're going to make the necessary adjustments, and they're going to figure it out on the fly. So you've got a very tough opponent coming up in the Miami Heat, and you better get yourselves ready. But that's all I've got for that series. Moving on to the Western Conference now. Haven't had to talk about that yet because there haven't been any sweeps. But moving on to the 3-1 series here, we've got two of those. I'm going to start with the Los Angeles Lakers leading the Portland Trail Blazers 3-1 in the series. And you know, after that first Trailblazers win, it was kind of shocked everybody, like, oh, this may actually happen. This may actually be an upset. The Lakers have kicked it in gear since then, and I think a big part of what that has, or what has kicked that off, has been Anthony Davis making some adjustments and really just checking into being Anthony Davis, AD, for an entire four quarters, for an entire seven-game series, for an entire playoff stretch. If Anthony Davis can continue to do that, of course we already know LeBron James is going to do it. Oh, man. Look out. Look out, guys. Now, I think this victory from the Blazers did show us that there are some serious weaknesses with this Lakers team. And coming into the bubble, a lot of people have pointed out some of the weaknesses that this Lakers team has, but that perimeter defense, especially against on-ball guards like Damian Lillard, is a serious problem for the Lakers. Now, if that's the only point of attack that your team has, very much like the Blazers, where it's going to be Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum doing their thing, you know, it's going to do some damage, but they're going to be able to stop you. They're going to be able to outscore you by the end of the game, by the end of a playoff series. Now, if you're able to put that perimeter pressure on them the entire game and have a release valve with a lob threat over the top, another release valve with an excellent three-point shooter in each of the corners, that's when you can cause this Lakers defense some serious pain, is when you can hit that pressure point of that perimeter defense and use that as the weakness that breaks down the entire defense and gives you anything that you want. But you have to be a team that can capitalize on that situation. So that's really what I see happening there for the Lakers. For the Trailblazers, I think they did an excellent job to get where they are. It's a tough matchup to go against the Lakers in the first round, to have to go up against that number one seed against LeBron and Anthony Davis. I don't think we should forget how awesome Damian Lillard and this Blazers team was in 2020, and that should be a story that sticks with us for a long time, is how Damian Lillard absolutely put this team on his back, carried them into the playoffs, and made sure that they got their money's worth out of going to Orlando. So I've loved watching this Blazers team. I can't wait to see what they build around this awesome core that they've got moving forward, see if they can actually build out this roster and make it more competitive around Damian Lillard. I think the biggest thing that they need to add in the offseason is going to be a guy who can defend on the wing and potentially score as well, but at least if you can get a solid 3-and-D starter to play that small forward position, that'll go a long way for the Blazers. But that covers my thoughts on that series. Moving on to the other 3-1 series in the West, and that is going to be the Denver Nuggets against the Utah Jazz. And boy, oh boy, this has been a weird, interesting, fun, exciting, scary series. It's just been everything all in one. So the first game, obviously Donovan Mitchell goes out, scores 57 points, third most all time in a playoff game, and loses. And at that point, as a Jazz fan, I was despondent. I'm like, no, Donovan's going to leave. Oh my goodness, no. We got to get Donovan Mitchell some help. Oh, he can score 57 and we're still going to lose? No. And then we come out, we get the win, absolutely blow them out in another game. And then they come out for game three, have a super tight game, goes all the way down to the wire. both Mitchell and Murray score over 50 points, which I believe is, I believe that might be the first time in playoff history. It's either first or one of the three that it's ever happened. I'd have to double check. Got my stats confused that the commentators were dropping, but really, really interesting series. It has been just back and forth with players getting hot, teams going on cold streaks, teams getting on hot streaks. It has been an entire series of runs. Just watching this series is a testament to how much teams in the modern NBA live and die by the three-pointer, specifically the Jazz. In game one, they could not hit a shot. They couldn't hit anything. The only player who could hit a shot was Donovan Mitchell. And when that's happening, you know, it's not a good night for the Jazz, because the Jazz shoot, I know for sure, they're top five in NBAs in three-pointers attempted every night. So when you're missing those shots and they're not falling at the rate that you expect them to, you start to fall behind of where you expected to be on points. All of a sudden, you have to step it up on the defensive end and get even more stops than you expected you would have to at the start of the night. You have to adjust on the offensive end to get yourself more opportunities inside, and all of those adjustments having to happen at once on the fly in the playoffs in game one against a great Denver Nuggets team. You just can't make those adjustments and come out with a victory on the fly like that. After making some adjustments heading into game two, into game three, where you get Mike Conley back, this Jazz team has just looked absolutely stellar, and I'm very happy that they have looked this good without Bogdanovich. In the regular season, Bogdanovich was a massive piece of the Jazz being as good as they were. So seeing them be able to rally the troops here, Mike Conley stepping it up, becoming the guy that we thought we were getting when we traded for him, has been huge. From the perspective of Denver on this series, this has got to be a tough and almost demoralizing series for Denver. You outlast that Donovan Mitchell just going absolutely nuclear in game one, and to come out and get blown out, to come out and lose a close game, and now to be down 3-1, that's just a rough spot to be in for a Nuggets team who probably came into this series saying, yeah, I think collectively we've probably got the better roster here. I think we've probably got, you know, there's a debate to be had about the duo of Mitchell and Gobert versus Jokic and Murray, but Denver had to feel pretty good about their side of that, not to mention the fact that they also have Michael Porter Jr., that they've even got Bol Bol just sitting there on the bench ready to soak up some garbage time minutes. This is a loaded Denver roster, and it's got to be in some way demoralizing for that team to just get absolutely beaten back by a 6-seed Jazz team that is shorthanded right now. I mean, for goodness sakes, Tony Bradley and Georges Niang are playing full-on rotation minutes, which is, you know, just as someone who's watched these guys a lot, not a good thing if you're the Jazz. No offense to those guys, but definitely some improvements still to be made. They're even playing third stringers minutes, you know, guys like Mieoni, second round picks, Jarrell Brantley, Rajon Tucker, undrafted guy, came from the G League. These guys have been getting minutes for the Jazz in the playoffs. Now, a big part of that is that blowout victory, where there was, you know, an entire quarter of garbage time minutes to soak up. So that makes sense, but when you're depending on Tony Bradley and Georges Niang, that's what tells you how depleted this Jazz roster is right now. And the fact that they're still beating down this loaded Nuggets roster lets you know that the Nuggets have some serious improvement to make. And I think for the Nuggets moving forward, they should start to focus on how can we package some of this talent together to get a kind of blue chip guy, to bring somebody else in who brings an entirely new dynamic to this team, instead of just being, oh, well, this guy's good at playing off of Jokic on the offensive end and playing defense. You've got a ton of those guys on your roster already. I think it's time that you add another star, as opposed to, you know, having five more guys who play really well with Jokic, because I think, you know, you look around the NBA these days, there's tons of 3 and D guys because those are the highly sought skills in the NBA. So you've got so many opportunities to bring in guys who can fit into that system, catch a pass from Jokic, and make a shot as well as play defense. I think you really need to focus on collecting some of that talent together, trading away multiple guys for one guy who can have a bigger impact on the floor. That's what I would look to do if I was in charge of the Nuggets, but of course I'm not. So moving on to the two, probably might be the two most interesting series in my opinion, and they're the two closest series so far in the playoffs. That is, I'm going to start with 4 versus 5 in the West, Houston Rockets versus the Oklahoma City Thunder. And this is the matchup of Chris Paul versus James Harden that we all wanted. We get to see Russell Westbrook going up against his old team in the Thunder, and oh my goodness, well, we don't really get to see that because Westbrook's injured, but man, this series has been so exciting, interesting, fun to watch. The matchup of Lou Dort on James Harden and watching everybody get so excited that Lou Dort's, oh, is he the guy who stops James Harden? No, but come on. But it's still fun to watch. It's fun to watch them get a little chippy, some shoulder bumps back and forth. Harden getting a little angry, going out, hitting some three-pointers, doing his thing. Yeah, it's just a really fun series to watch. One of my favorite things about watching this series as well has been watching Chris Paul just be an absolute professional on every level that you can look at. Now, Chris Paul has definitely made a reputation for himself around the league as being one of those guys who has a tendency to blow up, to yell at people, to be a little crazy at times. But watching him just mentor this young Oklahoma City Thunder team, mentoring specifically spent lots of time with Dennis Schroeder that I saw when I was watching them yesterday, spending time with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and really teaching these guys how to be great NBA point guards moving forward, teaching them a lot of the nuances and things to look for that you just would not get if you didn't have that superstar, perfect point guard mentor in Chris Paul to teach you those things early. So I think that's going to be a huge advantage for those guys moving forward. But just really fun to watch that. On top of that, he's out there playing at his absolute best. He's leading this Oklahoma City Thunder team to victories against the Rockets. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander looks absolutely, he looks amazing out there on the floor. You know, if there was a young guard I wanted on my team, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander would definitely be on that list because he's a guy who can just do everything, and he can do pretty much all of it at a really, really excellent level. So very excited to watch him continue to grow moving forward. For this series, kind of the thing that I think has been interesting is watching a lot of the other Rockets step up. You know, obviously missing Russell Westbrook, you kind of go into that series thinking, okay, well, this is going to be James Harden ISO show. We're going to be seeing the 60-point triple-doubles. You know, he's going to average 50 points for the series. But it's not quite been that. It's been James Harden as part of a team that's going out there to get a win against the Oklahoma City Thunder. And watching this Houston Rockets team, the one standout to me has been how hard they play, which is just not something I really expected to see out of them, at least for the long term. But watching them just dig for rebounds, watching their post defense against players that are bigger than them and that should be able to dominate them in the post, they end up not doing that because Houston is so active, they're so physical, and they are so determined to make sure that their post defense can hang with these other NBA teams that do outsize them, that they end up playing better post defense than a lot of teams that do have centers that belong in the paint defending these other NBA centers. So it's been really interesting to watch Houston just fully embrace the small ball and have success doing it. They're playing really well. Now, that said, you're tied 2-2 against this Oklahoma City Thunder team. There's no guarantees here. This is going to be a nail biter of a series all the way down to the very end. One of the big things is Russell Westbrook going to be able to get back into the game? If he's able to play the last three games of this series, it's going to look a lot different than it has up to this point. But man, I'm excited to watch the rest of these games. So that covers my thoughts on that series. On to the final series I want to talk about today, which is the Clippers versus the Mavericks. A little drink of water, excuse me. All right. So the LA Clippers, the 2 seed in the West, versus the 7 seed Dallas Mavericks. And this is going to be no news to y'all because we saw my... A Lukagasm, as Bill Simmons would put it. We had our first Lukagasm of the playoffs. That's the way he put it. I thought it was absolutely hilarious. If you were on YouTube at all yesterday, you saw about 1,000 videos about how great Luka Doncic is and the ever-growing legend that is Luka. My goodness. Oh my goodness, what I would give to have Luka Doncic play for the Jazz, but unfortunately for me, he plays for the Mavericks. But fortunately for the Mavericks, he's playing absolutely excellent. So even without Kristaps Porzingis on the floor in their last game, Luka Doncic goes out, has a, I believe, 30-point triple-double, and hits a clutch buzzer-beater step-back three in overtime to win the game. My goodness, guys. My goodness. One of the things that made it so special to me, that entire moment, is the moments of the game leading up to that shot. You know, tough, hard-fought fourth quarter, tough, hard-fought overtime. And leading up to it, Doncic was kind of hit or miss. You know, he's going down, getting some great buckets. Then he's taking some very similar step-back threes, clanking them off the rim. Doesn't faze him at all. Very Mamba mentality, where he just goes out there, says, yeah, I don't care that we're only down one. I'm taking this step back three at the buzzer and we're going to win this freaking game. And that's exactly what Luka Doncic did. And that's what makes him a different guy. He goes out there, he runs the pick and roll like he's a 10-15 year NBA vet point guard. He goes out there, he's got the skill level of, I mean, some weird cross between James Harden, Kyrie Irving, and LeBron James, just somewhere in there, with the tight handle that he has, combined with his ability to decelerate, his dribble moves, his counters, his ability to shoot off the dribble. There's nothing that you can do to stop Luka Doncic on the offensive end of the floor. And on top of that, he's also an excellent defender. He is far underrated on the defensive end of the floor. He's been making some great plays throughout this entire series on that end of the floor. Would love to see them get Kristaps Porzingis back. I think, you know, really the combination of these two guys has caused so many problems for the Clippers that if they can have them both on the floor for these final three games, they've got a real shot of taking this series. From the Clippers' perspective, what happened to Paul George? Playoff P, as he likes to call himself, once again showed who he is. He is... He's push-off P. He's pandemic P. He's the guy that can't get it done in the playoffs. That's what he is. That's what he's shown himself to be over and over and over again. You know, he had some success back in his days with Indiana, getting to the Eastern Conference Finals. But since he's been in the West, what's he done? Out in the first round. Out in the first round. Maybe again, out in the first round. Like, dude, you can't lose to a rookie Donovan Mitchell when you have the reigning MVP on your team and you're supposed to be playoff P. But you did. You can't come out here and lose to Damian Lillard on that depleted Portland Trailblazers team that you guys thought you were so much better than, and he just hits this dagger right in your eye from 40 feet from the basket to send you home and break up that entire team. you and Westbrook got traded because of that shot that Damian Lillard hit over you, Paul George. So, you know, not that this is supposed to be an all-out attack on Paul George, but just stop calling yourself Playoff P. That's all it takes. Stop saying that you step it up and you're so much better in the playoffs when you're not. You're not. You keep falling apart in the playoffs. Kawhi Leonard has looked good. He's done what Kawhi does, but he hasn't been dominant by any means. Luka Doncic has, in my opinion, definitely been the best player on the floor in this series. And when you're Kawhi Leonard, when you're the most sought-after free agent of that last free agency period, when you bring in Paul George to play next to him, and the Clippers all year were the favorites to win the title, and they come out and show pretty much all of their weaknesses in this playoff series. They have not looked as cohesive as a team as they should. Paul George has disappeared yet again, and Kawhi has not been able to pick up the slack. Although Kawhi has done what he needs to do, he's not done above and beyond, which is what you really need out of your superstar if you're going to win a tough playoff series against another great team. And that's what you're going up against with this Dallas Mavericks team. Let's not forget that this Mavericks team is only the 7 seed because Luka and KP both missed major time this year. If it wasn't for that, they'd probably be a 4 seed in the West. So this is a legitimate Mavericks team. Luka Doncic is playing at his absolute best, and you're not getting the contributions you need from Paul George and Kawhi Leonard for the Clippers. You're not getting the contribution you need from Lou Williams. You're not really getting what you need from everybody on that team. This Clippers team has been struggling big time, and the Dallas Mavericks may just capitalize on that. So what we need to see from the Clippers, if they want to win this series, they need to rally around Kawhi Leonard, let him do what he does, and really Doc needs to get in his ear and say, hey, we need you to come out and be that absolute beast who just carries us to a victory, because it's become pretty clear that Paul George is not going to be that guy. Now, if Paul George can just reset his mindset, be Paul George. That's it. Just be Paul George. Even if you're a regular season Paul George, that's great. That's great. You finished top 3 in MVP voting last year. You know, at times, Paul George is an all-defensive team type defender. If you are regular season Paul George in the playoffs, hell yeah, that's a great contribution to that Clippers team. But you can't be less than that. You need to come out and just be Paul George. If you just hit those open three-point opportunities, if you just make those open plays to your teammates without having to play hero ball, awesome. That's what your team needs. So if you're the Clippers, you want Paul George to just go out and be Paul George. You want Kawhi to come out and take over the game, which we know Kawhi can do. They just have to do it. So are they going to do that? That's going to be the huge question for the Clippers. But even if they do, Luka Doncic may be good enough to just counteract all of that and get the win and pull out this series regardless. So that is definitely the series I'm going to be keeping my eyes on the most as we're moving forward here. Just watching Luka Doncic come into his own and become the legend, the Luka, the GOAT. We'll see about that. Maybe a bit ambitious there. But that covers my thoughts on all the first round playoff series on August 25th here. Definitely appreciate you tuning into the episode. As always, if you enjoy the show and want to help it grow, the absolute best way to do so is to simply share this with your friends. So go ahead and leave a like, comment, subscribe. You guys know what to do. It's 2020, so I'll go ahead and let you get back to the rest of your day. Peace.